Hey guys, just want to apologize in advance for the audio quality of the following episode. We hope you stick around and enjoy all the fantasy baseball insight. All right, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and today I'm joined by one of the greats in the industry, Eno Saris of The Athletic. He's on Twitter at his name, Eno Saris, and you can find me at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Eno, thanks for taking the time to talk some fantasy baseball today.
Thanks for having me on.
So I saw you posted something on Twitter just a few hours ago about Vlad Guerrero Jr., that his steamer projections have him batting over 300 with an over 800 OPS if he was to get called up to the bigs the rest of the season. Have you seen something like this before for a rookie, let alone a teenage rookie?
I don't remember. I mean, the one thing that I do remember is that Dominic Smith, who came up with the Phillies back in the day, he had a projection from Bill James to go 30-30 in his rookie season.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, Bill James projections were notoriously excited about rookies, and you know, I think that was a kind of a flaw in those projections. Steamer usually projects people to be league average or worse as rookies, just because that's how it works out, you know? But if those Vlad projections would be true, he'd immediately be a top 30 bat in the major leagues.
Wow. That would be absolutely incredible as a 19-year-old. Would you rather, if you're doing like a dynasty startup, would you rather have Vlad Guerrero, Acuna, or Juan Soto?
I do like having major league data, and I'm not sure that Vlad Guerrero is going to steal many bases. So to me, it comes down between Soto and Acuna. And I just prefer Soto's plate approach and batted ball mix a little bit better. I know that he doesn't steal bases, and Acuna could give more fantasy value and probably will have a better peak season. But Soto is an all-fields hitter, doesn't really have the same sort of strikeout aggressiveness that Acuna does. And I think it's going to serve him well. I think he's going to have plus-plus batting average and homer totals going forward.
It sure seemed for a while like Vlad was going to be one of these guys that came up and stole a lot of bases like his dad. He's got like three on the season, though, so that doesn't seem to be the case. I think Acuna is going to steal a ton, but I agree. I'd go with Soto of the bunch.
It's hard with stolen bases going away. I mean, I wouldn't really put it against someone if they wanted to go with the steals. I mean, it's really hard to get steals and power together. And, you know, there's probably, if you want double-digit homers and steals, you're talking about sort of 15 players in the league right now.
You're right. So what is the ceiling for somebody like Vlad Guerrero? Can he hit like 350 with 40 homers? Is he that type of player?
You know, he has a shot at 400 in the minor leagues right now. So I do think that he will have a plus batting average. I think he's going to a park that's also going to help him in the batting average department. And where his father never really showed plus walk rates in the minor leagues, Vlad has. So there's a chance that we have a slightly less athletic version of his father in terms of speed and maybe arm. I mean, I think he has a good arm to be at third base, but maybe someone who's more selective and does have that same bat-to-ball ability.
You know, I read about how Vlad Guerrero Sr. grew up. You know, he didn't have a bat or anything. His brother or one of his friends would just throw him rocks and he'd try to hit it with a spoon, and that really helped his hand-eye coordination. I wonder if stuff like that Vlad Guerrero Sr. did growing up, if he had Vlad Guerrero Jr. do that, even though, you know, he had everything that he needed.
I haven't heard about that yet, but there also might be something that's sort of inherent to them in the genes, you know. I mean, if you look at those beautiful strikeout rates, I love seeing walk rates that are bigger than strikeout rates in the minor leagues.
Agree. That is a very rare thing, and when you see it, it is usually a very good indication. Here's what we've got planned for today's show. A few pieces of news. We're going to cover maybe 9 or 10 waiver wire guys, and then a couple questions from the listener mailbag. It's going to be a little bit shorter of a show, but get you the information you need as your playoff stretch is drawing near in fantasy baseball. I want to start with this Daniel Murphy to the Cubs news. The rich just keep getting richer, and I understand they've had a lot of disappointments, Yu Darvish, Chris Bryant, but what does this mean for Daniel Murphy in terms of fantasy? Is he going to play every day? I mean, this lineup is loaded.
Well, right now, because Addison Russell's finger is hurt, I think that there's an opportunity for him to just slot right in, push Javi Baez over to short. when Chris Bryant comes back, I do think that with his injury, I think David Bode will spell him occasionally and play, you know, spell Murphy too, probably play at second some. But I don't think that David Bode, as much as I like David Bode, and I think that he will be an asset going forward, he's hitting the ball harder than anybody in baseball, like literally. I'm not sure that he's going to steal playing time from Chris Bryant and Daniel Murphy too much. So I think it's going to be more, you know, 2, 3, 4 starts a week at most, stolen sort of equally from the two guys. I think Murphy will probably end up still playing 5 to 6 times a week.
I was crossing my fingers on last week's show that Bode would get more of an opportunity. Now he has, like, no fantasy relevance. What does it say about Javi Baez that he can move from second base to shortstop and still be one of the better defensive players in the game?
Yeah, he's an amazing talent. I'm wondering if I made the right move. I had a Keep 5 league where I wanted to consolidate. And when you have a Keep 5 league, there's almost, you know, one of my mottos is there is no overpaying as long as you get the best player in the deal. Because you really want to consolidate and you just really want the 5 best keepers. I already had like Trout and Seager. And I really wanted Alex Bregman. And I got him early in the season before this last run for Alex Bregman. And I gave up Javi Baez and Miguel Andujar. It may seem like a bit too much. One little quirk to the league is that batting, that strikeouts matter for the batter. And I just saw Bregman as being a plus batting average, home runs, steals, shortstop eligibility. I don't know though, you know, looking back, I'm kind of like, man, Javi Baez. The one thing that worries me a little bit about Javi Baez's surge this year is just that he hasn't really changed too much in terms of his plate approach. He still misses a ton. He's still super aggressive. And I just have to wonder if he'll sort of return to earth and be more of a 270 hitter going forward.
I think you nailed that trade. I mean, Baez might win the MVP this year. I don't know if he would be my favorite. I'd probably give it to Freeman, even over Matt Carpenter. I know a lot of people are saying Matt Carpenter, and all my St. Louis friends are going to kill me for saying that. But, you know, I think Baez is right up there as well. But, yeah, I would much rather have Bregman. I'm probably taking Bregman early, second round next year in fantasy. I'd peg Baez for, what, mid-third round?
Well, we'll have to see. I think they might get drafted near each other. But in my league, I think it made sense. I mean, Bregman has a 12% strikeout rate to 27 for, or, you know, in a normal year, 25 to 27 for Baez. So I'll bet on those guys to hit for good batting average. I do have a vote this year for NL Roy. That was interesting. I didn't bring that up. Yeah, so I will have to decide between Soto and Acuna for Rookie of the Year. But I don't have an MVP vote, so.
There are so many good NL Rookie of the Years. I mean, you've got Flaherty, too, who's phenomenal, and Walker Buehler, who we saw the other night. Those two go up against one another. Are they aces in the? Are they already aces?
Yes, I think so. I think the one thing that separates them is that Buehler starts with more velocity. So I'll always kind of tend to that direction, and so I'm a little bit more excited about Buehler. But Flaherty started throwing that change up a little bit, and it looked really good at times. And you know, with the curve, it's possible he has more pitches than Buehler. And it's also possible he has better command because he's a former shortstop that just something seems to really work for him in terms of commanding the ball, putting it where he wants to put it. So
those guys are unbelievable. And I feel like we've seen this narrative before where we had, remember, Michael Wacha and Matt Harvey, and everyone said, these are the next two. They were so great for a while, and then they kind of bombed out. Pitching prospects do that from time to time. But as it is now, I'm really excited about these two. And it would be a lot of fun to see those two square off in the wild card game. I mean, I'm sure we'd get Clayton Kershaw, but that would be exciting. Speaking of the NL playoff race, it is so tight right now. We've got 8 teams, 9 if you want to include the Nationals, who still kind of have a chance, but 8 teams who really have a chance at getting into the playoffs. Who do you have making this?
The Cubs will, you know, separate themselves a little bit here. I think Cole Hamels is in the middle of one of those stretches where you're like, this is why we picked him up. His velocity is up. He's throwing more pitches than he's ever thrown. So I think he's going to sort of turn into their ace, at least for this stretch. I still have confidence in the Dodgers. I know that they're right now, they're about 4 games back, but I don't really, I think there's holes in the Diamondbacks and Rockies. And as the Dodgers get healthier and healthier, they're going to fill in that bullpen behind Kenley Jansen. And they're going to, you know, Maeda's going to be decent in that bullpen. If Stripling's in the bullpen, he's going to be more than decent. So I see the Dodgers making it. I think they'll make it as the division winner, actually. So I think that Dodgers, Cubs, the NL East is super exciting. I actually don't know. I don't know.
I feel the same
projections,
way.
Projections say that really the Phillies should catch the Braves because there's no team that's projected to regress more than the Braves. The Braves are actually projected to give up more runs than they score going forward and to be a 480 team instead of not even a 500 team. You know, they're really overachieving in one sense of the word. However, some of that overachievement comes on the backs of young players that, you know, they don't always act in a linear fashion. You know, maybe Sean Newcomb really is this good. Maybe Acuna is just going to hit the ground running. You know, maybe all these guys are as good as they are. It's about youth in Atlanta. And I do know this. Atlanta seems to have more guys coming in the woodworks. And so if you think that their rotation or their bullpen is a bit of a mess, right, you know, a bit of a opportunity for the Phillies to get back in it, the Braves are just about to get a bunch of guys from the minor leagues. And in September, I think a parade of arms they seem to have. We don't know if they have the future ace yet. We don't even know if Newcomb is that ace yet, I don't think personally. But with that parade of arms, they can play that bullpen game almost better than anybody.
There could be three future aces there. There could be zero. I mean, we said this about the Orioles maybe 5-6 years ago. I can't even remember who those guys were, but they were all top pitching prospects. It's real exciting what the Braves have going on. I don't think this is their year. I think it's the Cubs or Dodgers. I agree. The Dodgers are going to make the playoffs. Even if it's just the wild card, they've got to be the favorite in that game. And I'm taking the Dodgers to go to the World Series at this point. I think their team is just too good to not be the favorite if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, especially with that bullpen filling out with the starters. I think I could see it. I got worried there for a sec. But, I mean, I just think as these guys get healthy, it won't matter. Scott Alexander will be their fifth guy in the bullpen. It won't matter as much. But, you know, beyond that, I think it's really interesting. I mean, the Phillies, Cardinals, and D-backs, if only one of them is going to make it, it's going to be kind of sad. You know, I guess I'll take the D-backs. They have... It's not as obvious to me what the holes are. You know, they have a decent bullpen. They have a decent rotation. They have a decent offense. The Rockies offense is just really unappealing to me, and especially on the road. And the Phillies and Cardinals are kind of like the Diamondbacks, but they have fewer wins banked, or at least the Phillies do.
The Cardinals are going with three rookie starting pitchers, too. I don't think that's going to last very long.
Yeah, we'll have to see. There's a lot of rookies on that staff and a rookie manager. So there's just a couple of things could go wrong and derail them.
That's the Cardinals, though. They're always carried by those rookies, and it tends to work out for them. You know, the Yankees lost Aroldis Chapman to the DL. Who's it going to be, Zach Britton or Robertson that's going to get the closer role?
You know, my secret sauce when it comes to this sort of thing is, you know, I have seen a lot of different things try to be linked to closing changes and stuff like that. And the only ones that I've actually seen any sort of inkling of actually working are velocity and strikeout rate. And then also the most powerful one, and it's it seems kind of obvious, is previous role. So really what you should ask is, you know, who's the setup guy now? You know, in terms of holds in the last 2 weeks, we've got Betances, Britton, and Robertson. In terms of, you know, strikeout rate, I would give it to Betances. And in terms of velocity, which I think is probably maybe the least important if the other things are there, but it's Betances. So I don't know why it wouldn't be Betances.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Betances, but you're right. This bullpen is so good. Like I said with the Dodgers, I mean, I understand the Red Sox are on the verge of, you know, maybe breaking the win record. I don't think they probably will, but the Yankees with that bullpen, they're as dangerous as anybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a thing of theirs in the last 5 or 6 years is just to have the best bullpen. And it's one of the things that you can do. It's really nice to be able to do that when you have a lot of money. I mean, to be fair, they've also groomed their own guys in you know, Chad Green and Dellin Betances, signed big free agents and also traded. I mean, Tommy Conley was just a little pickup for them. So AJ Cole they got for almost nothing from Washington. So they have a real little secret sauce there, I think.
It kind of goes back to the money there as well, though, because they can turn their good young pitching prospects into relief pitchers right away because they can just sign guys off the free agency. So You know, and they've got some quality guys that have come up into their rotation, like Severino. Okay, let's move on. I want to talk about Andrew McCutchen. He could potentially be traded, and he hasn't really been anything this year, but he's also playing his games in San Francisco, and I think he would be fantasy relevant if he ended up in the right spot. Are you hearing anything about where he might be traded or if he's going to get traded at all?
Yeah, it's weird. He cleared waivers, so he can go anywhere. That means nobody claimed him. You know, in terms of people that could use help in the outfield, the Indians,
exactly,
for one, are running Melky Cabrera out there. And I'm not sure they want McCutchen in center, but you could yeah. play an offense-defense platoon with Greg Allen, where maybe you start some games with McCutchen out there and bring Allen in as a defensive replacement. So, you know, I think the Indians could use him. Honestly, I think the Rockies could. I know that they've been running Gerardo Parra out there forever, but that offense could use a boost in my mind. I know that the run scored look good, but I think that's a little bit superficial because of their home park.
Cleveland is what came to mind right away for me. Maybe the Astros, they could stick him in left field instead of Tony Kemp, who they've been playing quite a bit. But yeah, I think it's Cleveland. I don't know if they make a trade, but it's interesting nonetheless. And I've picked up Andrew McCutchen in a couple leagues. I don't know why he was still available, but I picked him up thinking I'd rather have him than the bums on the waiver wire. And that's who we're going to talk about here in a second. I've got three outfielders to talk about, and I want to know which one you would rather have. Matt Holliday was just called up. He's batting fifth for the Rockies this evening. Nick Williams, who's been playing well lately, and then Byron Buxton, who's been playing all right in AAA. He's got to get called up eventually, right?
Yeah, yeah. My thing is, though, with Buxton is that I never know what I'm going to get. I feel like I'm a little bit worried about streaky guys like that. I know that people that need sort of a home run pick need everything to go right to win, that sort of deal. I think Buxton kind of rises to the top. But the closer you are to the top and the less you need someone to come up and steal you 10 bases in a month, I think the more the other guys are interesting. You know, Holliday, don't laugh too hard. I know he's 38 years old, but his projection, amazingly, is for a 270 hitter with sort of 20 home run power. So, you know, that's part park, part the fact that he was actually hitting the ball hard still with the Yankees last year, and outside of batting average, which might have been depressed by some poor batted ball luck, he had an okay line last year. So, especially OBP leagues, I would be even more interested in him. But the guy that impresses me the most, and this came up in a piece that I was doing about the A's, is that Nick Williams has made one of the largest decreases in all time in reach rate. So in terms of swinging at pitches outside the zone, he went from 45% last year, which is sort of Javi Baez, to 34% this year, which is basically league average, maybe a little bit worse.
He dropped 10%?
Yes, and that doesn't traditionally happen, so mostly it was a 10% drop across the board in swing rate, but the fact that he's still, you know, near average in swinging at strikes, or actually above average in swinging strikes, and now has brought his reach rate down to league average, that's huge, I think. I think he's a guy who can put bat to ball pretty well. I know his strikeout rates are pretty high, but I think that comes from his aggression, not necessarily his ability to make contact. He's playing in a good park for him, and I think it's starting to come together. I think the second half for him, he's hit .316 with, you know, above league average power, sort of 25 home run power. And he steals some bases here or there. I think he's a very good player. I'd rather have him out of anybody.
His overall profile kind of reminds me a little bit of Adam Jones, who, you know, has just been so consistent for 4 or 5 years. I think that's the type of player Nick Williams is going to be in this league.
Offensively, yeah, for sure.
The guy who's perennial, who is typically underrated every single year. There's always guys like that. Nick Williams, just kind of a boring player, but you know what? He gets the job done. And so of these three, yeah, I've already picked up Nick Williams a long time ago, but he's available in a lot of leagues, so that's why I want to mention him. Now, two infielders that I can't understand why Jed Jerko was owned in less than 10% of leagues. Ian Kinsler is now playing for the Red Sox. He was not very good to start the season, but he's been playing a lot better since he got traded. I don't know if it's because of the playoff race or whatever, but he's old. Can he still get the job done?
I mean, he's going to end the season with probably 15 homers and 15 steals. You know, that's, again, you know, if that's the sort of line you're looking for, I don't see a reason why not. The only thing holding him back is injury. I think with Jerko, the reason that everyone sort of worries about him is just the way that the Cardinals do business. You know, they have a lot of moving parts there. You know, it's not even clear that he's necessarily the starter at his position. I mean, it probably is because Carpenter's playing more at first base, but they just picked up Matt Adams, you know, from the Washington Nationals, and they could easily slot Adams in at first, put Carpenter over at third, and Jedrko becomes a backup. So
yeah, only plays against lefties. Jerko's good against lefties, not so much against righties, and Adams is the opposite. So yeah, I could see the Cardinals doing that as well. Now over at pitcher, there's five guys. They all strike out quite a few hitters. I want to start with Luis Castillo, who's kind of come on lately. Is this a trap? Are we going to pick him up and he's going to suddenly just be miserable again?
I just if it's a trap, I'm in. You know, they caught
okay.
me. I was into him at the beginning of the season. I know things didn't go so well for him. I think that basically he had this two-seamer that he wanted to throw. It has nice movement. Gave him a good ground ball rate. But he doesn't have great command of it. And so, you know, he left it middle-middle and gave a bunch of homers. But also his slider that he's been working on was slow and didn't have as much drop early in the season. And he's refound the slider he had late last year. So between sort of dialing back the two-seamer and refinding his slider, he's been really usable recently. And I'm into him again. Or I never really gave up on him.
I didn't either. Even when his ERA was up about 6, I still put him on my bench, and I was just like, I'm gonna wait until this is done. His stuff is just too good. I mean, what he did last year as a rookie in terms of, you know, just K per nine rate, minus hits per nine. That's something that I like to use just to see, you know, how much they're dominating hitters, and you know, some of that can be BABIP driven, of course. But Castillo was among the top 20 rookies of all time, and he was kind of an older rookie, but this is somebody who. He doesn't have elite stuff, but it's definitely second tier.
Yeah, and, you know, if you want to start with velocity like he's got, even though it's taken a drop off, he's still in the top 10 type velocity. That's going to make everything else work better. So, you know, if you look at his months, he has a March with a 7.8 ERA, a June with a 6.75 ERA, and if you combine the rest of his months, he's got like a 3.3. You know, young players, especially young players that pitch in Cincinnati, seem to have these fits and starts where they have to figure things out. And I think he's much closer to having figured it out now. And, you know, in keeper leagues, you might still have the opportunity to acquire him thinking for next year, just because the shape of his production means his ERA will be high and you might be able to sneak him out of there.
He's definitely the type of guy I want to be targeting in drafts next year. So he'll be on my radar, and I think he will drop, maybe go undrafted in a lot of leagues. Somebody else, very similar, Nick Pivetta is not really having the best season in terms of, you know, ERA 4.7, but you look at his xFIP, it's ninth in baseball at 3.14. He's striking out 29% of hitters. That's top 12 in baseball. Is this somebody that you want to own right now?
I do, and I do own him a fair amount. I know that there are just games where you question why you do.
yeah.
You know, he went out in Cincinnati and gave up 5 in six innings. He just gave up 6 runs in 3 2/3 to the Mets. But if you just like kind of look at the other ones in between, you're like, wow, there's a lot of 1-run, 2-run games. His strikeout to walk ratio is amazing. Even in that Cincinnati game, he struck out 12 against 2 in 6 innings. He's got really good stuff. The question is always, can he get, you know, certain pitches over? Can he get that curve in for a strike? Can he get, you know, the first strike over? I will always believe in somebody like this, especially in the National League. You know, worst case scenario, he's someone like Pineda. But
that's exactly who I was going to say. Same thing. Yep.
Where he, in order to throw strikes, he throws too many middle strikes and has a high home run rate. But if you put Pineda, even during those times where he was struggling, even in Philly, which will give up some homers, I just don't think it'll be the same as Pineda looked in New York. I think Pivetta is probably like a 3.75, 3.8 ERA guy. But if you pair that with his strikeout rate, it's always going to be a positive. I think he's a good sort of fantasy 2-3.
Yeah, maybe like a Chris Archer who, you know, hasn't really had the best ERAs of the past three, four seasons.
But always gives you a ton of strikeouts. Yeah.
Well, what about Pineda? He's been, he's going to get called up here in the next few weeks. And I know he's going to be on a pitch count, but is he someone who can help fantasy teams down the stretch?
I think in those AL only leagues, it's a possibility. I have them stashed in a couple where you have the unlimited DL, you know, and in certain leagues, you might be able to get some interesting ratios out of him as a, because I doubt he's going to go long into games. You might be able to stash him in your SP slot and get some innings out of him. But the main thing is I would never play him before he started pitching in the major leagues, because I want to see the velocity number, and the velocity number on a returning pitcher from the DL, becomes meaningful in 2 to 3 games. So if he comes up and pitches, you know, 91, 92 for the first 2 games, he's droppable right away.
Okay. Two other pitchers with good strikeout stuff, but they're very streaky. I don't know what to make of them. Freddy Peralta, Vince Velasquez. Are you believing in either of them enough to be more than just a streamer in standard leagues?
No. you know, Freddy Peralta, I like the fact that he gets the most out of his fastball. It's, you know, you look at the gun and it says 90-91, but he's sort of jumping at the hitter and releasing it really close to him. So his effective velocity is more like 93-94. It's the biggest difference in the game, actually. And he's got some funky mechanics, so it's hard for people to pick up. But I think those funky mechanics lead to just terrible control. You know, he's projected by some systems to have a 6 per 9 walk rate.
Oh, man.
I don't know if it's going to be that bad. But I think it'll rob a lot of the juice out of his strikeout rate and give him, you know, Pivetta-esque ups and downs. He had a, you know, give up 7 against Atlanta, give up 7 against Washington in between some great starts. And the problem is, and it's the same problem with Pivetta. The thing is, with Pivetta, at least he's a year and a half into it. You know, he knows about it, he's working on it, and he's you know, he's got some adjustments in his rear mirror. Peralta may do this all year, and we'll have to see. It could get worse if the walk rate starts to climb up like it's supposed to. So, and with Velasquez, I think that he's almost like Pivetta, but then you have to add like massive injury risk and just maybe not as great stuff either. So it's like a lot of the risk without the same kind of upside, I think.
I'll be excited to see if Peralta can figure it out next year. Because you remember Jose Berríos, he came up and had a really rough rookie year. He couldn't find his command, and then he got it together. Now, these are two different types of pitchers, but it's just to show, you know, what a kid with command issues can eventually become.
Yeah, I think the thing that worries me, you know, past the stuff I said about Peralta is that, you know, his secondary stuff is not, you know, the thing that you could see when Berríos came up was like, wow, that's a nice curveball. And, you know, he had 93, nice curveball. And when he showed the change, it was like, okay, that could be good. With Peralta, it's kind of like, okay, he's got these crazy mechanics and he's got this, you know, he's making the most out of his fastball. But when I watch his curveball, I don't get the same kind of feeling I did with Berríos.
So more like a Tony Cingrani who could end up in the bullpen?
I mean, he throws 80% fastball, so it's a legitimate name to bring up, yeah.
Yeah. All right, last pitcher I want to talk about here is Matt Harvey, and he's someone else who could get traded. First of all, do you see him getting traded? And if he does, is he someone that, you know, once he leaves the Great American Launchpad, that you would want to pick him up?
I was actually talking to a Major League general manager about Matt Harvey, and I said something about available starting pitchers, and he said, like, who do you think's available? And I said, well, you know, Urban Santana's throwing 88, and then Matt Harvey, and he kind of finished my sentence, was like, not good.
So <Yes. laughs>
I don't know. There's a lot of enthusiasm around the league. One thing that could happen, though, is that there are a couple teams that chose not to really fortify their bullpen. I'm thinking kind of like the Dodgers and the Red Sox that could acquire him and put him in their bullpen. And maybe they think that, you know, one more boost back up to sort of over 95 will recover some of what Harvey used to be. One thing that has really happened over time with Harvey is just that his curveball has kind of disappeared completely and that the changeup is not as effective as it used to be. So he's become much more of a fastball slider guy over time. And if you kind of limit his exposure to righties, to just facing righties and hope for a little bit of a boost in gas, you might get the best Matt Harvey. Because right now, his splits against right-handers are pretty good. You'd expect kind of a 3.8 ERA if he just faced right-handers. But against lefties, his, you know, his FIP and his XFIP are over 5. And he's just struggling to strike them out, and he walks them, and he gives up almost 2 homers per 9 against lefties. So
we've seen dozens of starting pitchers, you know, become aces like Matt Harvey and then take his career route where they just kind of bust. Have we ever seen someone that, you know, bounces back to 100% of what they once were?
Well, I think especially not with the injuries that he had. The thoracic outlet surgery, there's like pretty much just one success story. And is that Chris Carpenter?
Chris Carpenter, I don't know if he's really human, because didn't he have a rib removed so that he could keep pitching?
I mean, that's what thoracic outlet is.
Oh, okay. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, thoracic outlet, you remove like the top rib or something to kind of allow your shoulder muscles to. And I think he did it in like 2006, and he didn't come back until 2009. So I think that gives you a sense of, you know, I mean, he did pitch a little bit here or there, but in terms of the next season, he actually pitched more than 20 innings. It was 2009. So it was 3 years in between, you know, him having the surgery and him being good again. And I think he kind of reinvented himself, and it took a lot to get to that moment. And he didn't really quite have the same kind of stuff. I mean, he never really threw the changeup like he used to. And yeah, there was a lot of changes. Carpenter is the success story, and that's the one out of like the 20 thoracic outlets that have been performed.
Another name that I thought of, Scott Kazmir. Now he didn't have the same injury or anything, but he did miss 2011, 2012. He missed 2009, and then he came back and was an all-star eventually. He didn't strike out 240 guys like he did when he was 23 years old, but you know, someone who became an all-star again. So I guess it does happen every once in a while.
Next year will be, you know, kind of 3 years since Harvey went down. So in your AL onlys or NL onlys, you know, depending on where he shows up in spring, you know, someone who can throw 96 and he can still hit 96 is always going to get a little eyebrow raised from me. But in terms of like 12 teamers and stuff like that, I'm not buying in.
All right, well, let's finish out the show with just 3 short mailbag questions. The first one's from Ryan in California, and he says, I've seen a bunch of people just, you know, they get up an ERA and WHIP, batting average in head-to-head playoffs, and then they bench their team. Is that the right move to make? Is that okay to do?
You know, for me, I'm kind of an agnostic. Whatever is in the rules is in the rules, you know, and really, we're all just playing a game. The rules are defined. They're all obvious out there. If you don't like someone streaming, for instance, then put it up for a vote in the off season. And there's plenty of ways to kill streaming. You know, IP limits, IP maximum. You know, there's all sorts of different ways. You put strikeouts per 9 in. That hurts streamers. There's rules that you all agreed on. And if the person benching their players makes their minimums, then they did the right thing. And I've had people ask me this, and it's math too. You know, if you're like, okay, if I bench them now, I win ERA and WHIP, I lose strikeouts, I lose wins, but I make it to the next round.
I agree. Yeah, and it's not fun, it's not sexy to do, but whatever it takes to win, your opponent would do the same thing. So I think you got to do it to them, right? All right, this one's from Brian in Illinois. He wants to know how to handle players like Chris Bryant in a keeper's league. I mean, is he still a top 30 fantasy baseball asset?
I looked at Chris Bryant's exit velocity over time. It's really interesting. It definitely took a big hit this year with the shoulder problems, but it had already taken a hit last year. And it's hard to know if that was the shoulder, because he said that the shoulders kind of bothered him for a while, or if it was kind of trying to cut his strikeout rate, because he went from striking out 30% of the time in his rookie season to striking out 19% of the time last year. It's hard to know exactly which Bryant you want. I mean, you want the Bryant that, you know, struck out 22% of the time and hit 39 bombs. But a guy who could hit 300 regularly and hit 30 homers like he did in 2017, you know, 29, I think would be super valuable and would be a top 30 asset. So if he can get back to that, if he can get the shoulder right, it may require surgery though. And is he going to get surgery if the timeline brings him back into spring? You know, is he going to get surgery if he plays into November again? I mean, all these things are up in the air. I think for me, I'm going to try and just project him for like 280 and 25 homers. You know, just that's a kind of a cocktail napkin kind of projection. And I'm not sure that does make him a top 30 type player.
This is how I was thinking of him when I read the question. Jose Abreu, but at the hot corner. That's about what we projected Abreu for, right? Maybe 290, 32, 33 homers.
And put him up against a healthy Eugenio Suarez.
That's right. Abreu was going about 35, 40 overall. If you give him third base eligibility, I think he would have been about top 30. But yeah, I think I'd rather have Suarez.
Right. So there's too many guys there at the back end of the top 30 that, you know, Anthony Rendon, you know, not the greatest season for him, but you'd kind of hesitate to pull the trigger. Trevor Story's right there. So it always has to do with specifically the other keepers that you have on your team and that you have available to you. So hate to be wishy-washy and say kind of like he's probably top 40.
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably top 40, so he's not far from top 30. You know, there are other players I prefer over him.
All right, last question, Eno. This one is from Ellis in Louisiana, and he wants to know, if you had the number one overall pick in a startup dynasty league, is Trout still the pick? Is it one of these kids or maybe Jose Ramirez?
I mean, Trout is only 27, so...
That's amazing.
Yeah, somehow. Somehow he's still only 27. And Ramirez has just really overachieved when it comes to his power, which just makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, Trout is a guy who's always had these tools and continues to have these tools and is in his prime. So it's still Trout for me. I mean, Ramirez and Betts are right there, but Betts has had his up and downs when it comes to power. I could see Ramirez having the same kind of ups and downs with his power. I could see him hitting, you know, 22 homers next year.
Betts is the only one I was thinking of putting up against. I mean, I've got Ramirez obviously in my top five. I think Lindor is top 10 as well, and he's super young. Maybe if Corey Seager or Carlos Correa had stayed healthy and we could have seen them, you know, morph into that superstar, they would challenge. But it's Trout for me, and then Mookie Betts, and then Jose Ramirez.
I mean, Betts, yeah, Betts makes it harder. Betts is 2 years younger, which I think is super relevant when it comes to stolen bases, which age terribly. And, you know, Betts is probably going to go 30-30 this year, and he's going to do it with a 340 average. He has better strikeout rate than Trout does.
125 runs, even though he missed 20 games?
Yeah, I mean... He's on that great offense. Trout's offense around him has never been as good. Yeah, I mean, Betts, now you're talking. Now that's the big decision for me.
The thing is, Trout's been one of the top three players in baseball for each of the last 5 years, and Betts had a down year last year. I mean, he had an 803 OPS. Yeah, he went 25-25, but he batted 264. So,
and people used to think that last year was kind of a ceiling, which, I mean, amazing season, you know, all-star season, probably not number one in baseball that year with 24 homers. So, you know, he's busted past his ceiling, so maybe all bets are off. But I you know, if I was going to project him next year, I'd probably project Betts for like 325-25. And I'd predict Trout for 330-25.
Trout's been better than that almost every year of his career. Yeah. So, and with Trout being just 27 years old, I mean, could we see one of these seasons where he just suddenly hits 50 homers, drives in 130 runs, steals 20 bases?
Well, amazingly, he's still projected for 8 more homers this year, so he could hit 38 this year. One thing that has really changed for him is his ability to make contact. I mean, he's really, strikeouts used to be a thing with him.
Yeah, he led the league in 2014.
I think he could have a little bit of a year like Betts is having this year, but like, yeah, more homers. So like a 330. You know, 45-25 type season.
All right. Well, that's all for today's show. Eno, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to come on and talk.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And thanks for having me.
And for those of you listening at home, we're going to be doing, you know, one episode every week or every other week. So if you don't want to miss them, subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss them. We've also got the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast going on that I host too with Mike Tagliere. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your baseball.